Happy Thanksgiving and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks for being with us on this Thanksgiving. We're delighted to get a chance to be with you. If this is your first time listening to Catholic Answers, because you're not usually off at this hour, I'll just let you know you can find out all about us at Catholic.com. Just visit Catholic.com. You can find out all about what we do. We're an apostolate in California for now. Dedicated to explaining and defending the Catholic faith. Why did you say that?
What are you trying to confuse people, Si?
Well, I'm just saying California is tolerable.
Oh, you
up
mean
to
it,
a
might,
point.
It might slide into the ocean?
You never know what's going to happen. Chris Check is our guest. Chris is president of Catholic Answers. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Si. You remind me of a lyric from the famous California poet, Warren Zevon.
Oh, yeah.
If California slides into the ocean like the mystics and statistics say it will, I predict this hotel will be standing until I pay my bill.
That's the great Warren. He really could write a lyric,
yeah,
couldn't he?
I'm trying to think what song that came from. I'm a great admirer of Warren Zevon.
Most people just know him from Werewolves of London.
Yeah, he wrote a lot of wonderful songs and did in his early career, he was working with the Everly Brothers. But there's an episode of Warren Zevon's life where he's in Barcelona, I think, visiting the Gothic Cathedral there. Not the Gaudi, but the one in the Gothic Quarter. I think it's his wife who tells the story. He expresses his admiration for the Catholic Church and how beautifully they do things.
Really?
Yeah. So,
you always think of him as an unbeliever, and I hope that he, in the end, came to believe. But, well, that's very nice. Good job, Spain. Spain always
right.
does it right.
Well, it does, you know, it shows we're in the apologetics trade here. Strictly speaking, that means, constructing the logical arguments to defend what the church teaches. But I've always said, you know, there's a broader kind of apologetics, whether it's an apologetics of architecture or art or beauty or music or any one of these that draws, it's all drawing us closer to Jesus.
Yeah. Yes.
Or if it's not. So if the building's not drawing you closer to Jesus.
Or the apologetic's not, somebody's doing something wrong.
It's defective. Yep.
Well, there's the other thing, though. It's either it's defective or you are.
Right.
And in time, it will work on you and overcome your defects.
I was in Prague one time, many years ago, in the beautiful, I think it's St. Vitus Cathedral there, where good King Wenceslaus is buried. And
the one that looked out on the Feast of Stephen?
He, as a matter of fact, he did.
Okay, just want to make sure we're talking about the same one.
Bring me flesh and bring me wine. That's always been one of my favorite Christmas carols.
It's a good one.
It is, because it's a sing-along. It's manly. It's a manly song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was there with some non-Catholics, and he was staggered by the place, to be sure, the one that I was talking to. And I said, it's magnificent, isn't it? And he said, it is magnificent. You know, as long as it doesn't become the worship of the religion. And I'd never heard that before. This was, I don't know, 20 years ago. I'd never heard that from a Protestant, you know, that all of this is not the worship of God. This beautiful cathedral is not the worship of God. It's the worship of the religion. And that was his criticism of it.
It's so interesting because as a Catholic, I've never experienced a church that way.
No.
Like, I've never walked into a church and gone, praise to the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Like, you feel yourself in the presence of something holy. That's what a great church does.
Right, right.
You know, oh, well, anyway, we're going to talk. Well, the Catholics and Protestants do figure in the story that we're about to tell, which is the coming of the gospel to the new world this hour. And I'm very happy to have you with us, Chris, because I love your historical work. I love to hear you tell stories.
My twisted interpretations of history.
Yes. I had to give a talk to a group one time right after they had heard you speak, and you had been speaking about Lepanto. And I was like, I'm doomed.
Was this the men's group up
in this was in Australia.
We were
in Australia.
Okay, right. Yeah.
So you had just finished speaking about Lepanto, and I thought, I'm doomed, because this is such a great talk when you talk about Lepanto. And I'm looking out at them, and they all have that look of like, we're ready to go. We're ready to fight for the gospel. Give me a rosary in one hand and a sword in the other. They're all looking like that. And I said, did you just come from hearing Chris Check speak? And they said, yes. And I said, was Don Juan dancing on the bow of a boat? And they all cheered. They're like, yeah, he was. I was like, yeah. Okay, I love that story too. So is that available for people, by the way? Can they get your talk?
We have the three-hour version here at Catholic Answers at shop.catholic.com.
Yeah, you should get it. Yeah. Okay, but this is your forte, really. is talking about history, don't you think? Or am I selling it wrong?
I like to, you know what it is, Si? I like to see the path of salvation history. I like to see, here's how I would say, I like to see the incarnation at work.
Yes.
In the story of man.
Yeah, great.
How about that?
And that's all. That's part of what Thanksgiving is about, is that the encounter between the people who came and the people who are already here is an encounter between a people who had received the gospel and a people who had not yet received the gospel.
That is true.
And we don't like to emphasize that anymore, because that makes it seem like we're saying the Native American people were somehow lesser, and that's not at all what that means. When you're not a, it's a people who haven't yet received news of something very, very important.
That's exactly right, and the same in south of the Rio Grande and in Canada as well.
Right, and this is one of the things too that I've learned from you. Actually, I remember specifically when I learned this from you. This idea of thinking about the different ways the gospel was brought to America, and the way that it was brought to the United States, what we now know as the United States, wasn't the best.
No, and elements of it that linger. You know, Si, it's a kind of a funny combination of individualism and exceptionalism. That's how I would describe the pilgrims. The pilgrims were a particular group of Puritans, descendants of Anabaptists or Calvinists, who in England were trying to purify the Church of England. So get all, actually what that meant
they're
was—
they're anti-sacramentalists.
Get all the Catholic bits.
Yeah, priests and sacraments, get rid of them. Yeah.
Yeah, anything that, any of that that's still in the C of E, we need to get rid of. So that's the element of it. So that's what that word Puritan comes from, you know, many years later. Of course, H.L. Mencken says a Puritan is someone who is lying awake at night worried that somewhere someone might be having a good time.
That's probably the greatest line from Mencken. That is so brilliant. Yeah. Somewhere is having a good time.
Right. A little unfair to the Puritans. Yeah, I mean, I think they believed in having a good time too. But and maybe some of their doerness is overstated. But what we do know about them is they had this Calvinist exceptionalism that really, I think, finds its origin. I mean, you get Tim in here, he could talk about it better than I can, but really finds its origins in sort of a return to the Old Testament. So the pilgrims certainly understood themselves as new Israelites.
Yeah.
And it's obvious in all of their sermons. The common names, first names, among Puritans, all come from the Old Testament.
Right. Yeah.
So we see a lot of influence of the sense that we're the new chosen people. So you have this exceptionalism that you find in Calvinism, the elect, right? And then an individualism as well. This is kind of the funny thing about Protestantism. Everyone can pick up scriptures and read it as he sees fit, right? So how those things actually are in harmony has never been particularly clear to me. But the worst elements of that individualism and exceptionalism, well, are at play in current American life and in our politics and our foreign policy. But they certainly were, to get to your original question, I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay.
Very much at play in the treatment of the indigenous population in the world that is, or in the part of the world that is now called the United States of America. And that finds itself expressed in this term we use to be manifest destiny, where we have the exceptional thing, the shining city on the hill, however you want to describe that. This is ours, given to us by God, right? And so your land, by the way, is in the way. Your practices are in the way, your traditions, your customs are in the way. So the experience with the natives is very different in French Canada, Spanish Latin America, and Protestant United States, with the exception, of course, of California, Junipero Serra, different story.
Yeah, that's a total. Right.
And then Franciscans and later French priests in the high Southwest. Wow, sorry.
No. I think that that's great. And this is the thing is that we tend maybe to. I know a young woman who's kind of a social justice type. That's what they call them nowadays, right? And she's not going to celebrate Thanksgiving this year because it represents an offense against Indian people. And part of me thinks, well, she's kind of right about that.
Oh, there are elements of it, for sure.
I mean, like we have this kind of story of Thanksgiving, which is disconnected from the history of the holiday itself, which is really a post-Civil War holiday. Giving thanks to God.
Oh, sure. Abraham Lincoln is the first one. Yes. And then it gets a jump start by one of the Roosevelts, maybe, or Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah. So it's not really like, it's not like the founding fathers were celebrating Thanksgiving. But then these post-Civil War people go back and tell a story about the pilgrims in order to kind of unite the country and bring us together again.
Very much.
That.
It's a deliberate attempt to help create a national myth. And there, yeah. And I'm actually not opposed to that kind of thing. I mean,
sure.
If it's done out of whole cloth, then, you know, it's dishonest. But the Pilgrim Fathers who came to the Massachusetts Bay Colony or Plymouth Rock, that is an important part of the story of the American founding. And there were good and bad elements of the relationship with the natives.
Right. But there were, this is the part that there were better projects for sharing the gospel in the New World than the one that the pilgrims engaged on.
Mexico and Canada are examples of these.
Let's talk about that when we come back. We'll take a quick break. Thank you for joining us on this Thanksgiving. We're talking about the coming of the gospel of Jesus Christ to the New World on this day when we remember the pilgrims and the Puritans and all of that. We'll continue that with Chris Check, our president, right after this.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Hi, this is Teresa Tomeo, host of Catholic Connection, heard every morning weekdays on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, wishing you and yours a beautiful and blessed Happy Thanksgiving. And remember, as we're reminded in Colossians 3:17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of our Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. Happy Thanksgiving.
Welcome back to this Thanksgiving edition of Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, joined by the president of Catholic Answers, Chris Check, talking about Thanksgiving, but also in the wider context of the coming of the gospel into the new world. And it had various different ways. The gospel was introduced into the new world in different places, in different ways. The little tiny little bit of knowledge that I have suggests to me that the pilgrims didn't do it the best, that it was done better in other places. But it doesn't mean that they were horrible, bad people, just that there were for one thing, 1620, the pilgrims come to Massachusetts.
400 years.
1620 is only 100 years after the Reformation. I mean, we've gone through the wars of religion. It's white hot. There's hatred, really, between these folks and the Catholic Church.
Well, I would say the wars of religion are continuing. In fact, I mean, the 30 Years War, right? That's early part of the 17th century.
Right.
And then that is followed by, or maybe that's just about to get started. And then, of course, that's followed by the English Civil War, which isn't as long, but it's as not quite as brutal. It's on a smaller scale. But the same kind of attitudes about warfare and modern warfare that were birthed in the 30 Years' War, you see made manifest, particularly, like, for example, in Oliver Cromwell's treatment of Ireland.
Yeah.
I think of that folk song, Young Ned of the Hill. I can't sing it on the air.
Come on.
No, it's a little, it's got that, it's got a kind of a, you know, Irish element to it.
Well, put your finger on the beep button. Just beep. Every time you think something bad's going, I'm just teasing.
A curse upon you, Oliver Cromwell.
Nick is all panicked in there. I can't do it. Right. I'm not going to be able to keep up with the beeps.
But in any case, so the wars, it is in the context, you're absolutely right, of those wars. And even within England, of course, there is an understanding, even after Henry, there is an understanding of a relationship between monarchy and church. But the Puritans want none of this.
No.
The Calvinists certainly want none of this idea that, to them, all of the problem was that the Roman Catholic Church had become too tied up in its own, you know, royalty, if you will.
Yeah,
the papal states, the Pope as a secular monarch. So we're gonna purge of all of that and get back to the early church is the idea among the Calvinists, and that's the idea that the pilgrims bring here, and not as we all were told in third grade to martyrs of or
religious
people,
freedom.
Yeah, people wanted to bring religious freedom. No, they wanted to come and practice religious tyranny or religious exclusiveness.
They wanted their own place to practice their own religion. And they sure as heck didn't want you coming there and practicing your religion.
And only theirs. And even into I've said on this show in the past, my favorite example of this is even into the time of Paul Revere, so into the 18th century, David Hackett Fisher in his book Paul Revere's Ride points out, you didn't celebrate Christmas in Massachusetts.
No, that was Catholic.
In the 18th century.
Yeah,
yeah, and there were no public Christmas trees in Scotland until somebody told me, into the 1960s or 70s or something. So that's John Knox up there, but it's kind of that influence of Calvinism. We're getting far afield here. Sorry.
No, that's okay. So. These pilgrims, they come because they want to flee to a place where they can basically do what they want religiously.
Right. Yeah, create their new world, their new Jerusalem.
When they come, however, they meet what is quite possibly a Catholic person, at least a person who was baptized Catholic. I don't know if you know this, but Squanto.
I've heard this story, but go ahead. You probably have it better than I do.
Well, this is one of the most amazing things in the whole history of the United States is the story of Squanto, of this person, Squanto, who greets them and can speak their language and can interpret for them to the local people, even though his people are dead, because he's been taken to Spain as a captive or as a servant or something. I don't know how you would qualify, but I think as a captive though. And he apparently has been baptized by the Spanish. So that would mean baptized into the Catholic Church.
Right.
But there's no evidence for certain that this happened. But then he wants to, at some point, maybe after his time of indenture is over, he wants to go back home. And so to get him back home, he's sent to England. While he's waiting for a ship that can take him, he learns to speak some English. He gets sent back. I think he ends up he has to walk hundreds of miles home once he gets to the Americas. And then he gets back to his village and everybody's dead because smallpox probably, but something like smallpox. One of the European diseases has wiped out. So he's kind of a guy on his own trying to make it with the other Native Americans, but no family. And then he's the guy that they meet when they come to this. So they come all the way across the ocean thinking they're going to come and meet the Indian people. No idea how they'll communicate with them. And they meet this English-speaking, possibly Catholic, Squanto.
It's a good story.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. But it also gives some indication of what was going on in the Americas at the time. I mean, people think of the pilgrims were the first to come. This is not true at all. And that particularly the Basque, but also French Huguenots and British, we're sailing up and down the east coast of America all the time because there were so many fish. They were coming over to take fish and then just sailing back across the Atlantic.
And Jamestown predates Plymouth, right?
Yeah. So I think there's this kind of image of the pilgrims out in the wilderness, but there were Basque ships that came. There were Europeans around, and there were people like Squanto who could speak their language. Very, very odd little. So possibly, we don't know for sure that Squanto was baptized into the Catholic Church, but it's quite possible given his life story.
This is a couple of months ago, of course, when we were all having to defend Christopher Columbus more than usual because his statues are being torn or taken down. They're either being taken down by vandals or vandals who are elected officials. And so we found ourselves in October, especially having to defend Christopher Columbus. But it is almost, Cy, what you're saying here. Unless there is an agreement that we want to look at the story in the light of the incarnation, there's going to be a limit to what we can agree on. And it'll be, Columbus, I think this is obvious, but similarly with the Puritans, for all of their heresies and everything, these were Christian people.
Yeah.
They were Christians, and their motives were in their faith.
Yeah.
I would say more than it. It's really more than in Jamestown. Now, both had kind of government backing to a degree, Jamestown more than the other, or investors, if you right. will. So there were economic interests as well. But then also in Mexico and in France, sure, there are trade interests.
Yeah.
I said France, Canada. Beaver, for example, in the French.
And gold in the case of Mexico.
Yeah, really. Yeah. But all of these are, it isn't long after that the missionaries are sent along to start to baptize, to teach, to catechize and baptize the natives. That seems to be less of a concern in the United States.
The mission, yeah. Okay, so here's two things that, again, I got these from you, but one is this failure of missionary activity among the Native Americans, but also the failure to...
By Protestants.
Yeah. And also, but the failure to integrate with the Native American people, where within a few generations, you have a new thing called a Mexican in Mexico, which is European men who took Mexican wives and
this is deliberate policy
in
New Spain. It is deliberate policy to catechize, baptize, and marry, intermarry with the native population. And in fact, the Spanish, as far as I know, are a people more than any other who have very elaborate charts, you know, describing the names for all the levels of mixed blood. Some people take offense to this. I mean, it's just a demographic... I don't know, what would you say, like a demographic science.
But the Spanish learn the languages of the people, like people like Junipero Serra much later. Like he goes and learns the languages. It's not easy to go learn the native languages.
Especially most of these languages, of course, aren't written down. And then you've got absolute, in my mind, linguistic geniuses like Brebeuf in Canada with Isaac Jogues, these Jesuits. My goodness, I mean, you think of these men, capital intellects, and just the first-rate minds of their age, masters of languages. Of course, they would have had Greek and Latin.
Yeah.
And so they're very adept at languages. But, you know, Brebeuf coming to the Hurons and without a written language and then giving them one and then preparing a catechism in it.
Right.
And a carol.
Yeah. So let's go to Canada for a minute then, because these are primarily, these are not merchants. These are primarily celibate men who have devoted themselves, really, truly devoted themselves to Jesus Christ. And all they want to do when they come to the Huron and the, who's the other ones? I can't remember.
But Iroquois.
All they want to do is share the gospel. They've come to serve people, in other words. They have not come in any way to dominate the people.
No, and I mean, I think everyone's familiar with the horrible martyrdoms that these men endured. I mean, ghastly, diabolical, brutal tortures. But setting those aside, just the living conditions. that these guys endured when any one of them could have been, you know, a university president or or a seminary rector,
right,
or you know, or head of an abbey or whatever it was. Perhaps not an abbey. What do Jesuits call it?
A house. It's just a house for the Jesuits. Yeah.
But in any case, you read the descriptions of life in the longhouses and the Huron longhouses where there's animals inside and they're defecating inside and animals running around and then, you know, fairly free expression of marital love.
Sometimes marital, but
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the smoke that fills the place. And so, you know, Jogues or one of them talking about, well, I can go outside and freeze to death or be in here and try to write in the smoke where my eyes are killing, stinging me. And
yeah, stuff. Right. Yeah. Extraordinary men.
They did it out of love of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and then you get people like Kateri Tekakwitha isn't that good how I pronounce that?
Amen.
Saint Kateri Tekakwitha. You don't see that here in the United States. We'll be right back with more about the coming of the gospel to the new world on this Thanksgiving.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Dr. David Anders. Is God an angry God?
We answer questions like these every day on Call to Communion, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on this Thanksgiving Day. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. When we think about the pilgrims coming, we think about Christianity coming to America. The pilgrims were not early arrivers. The Spanish had come to lots and lots of parts of America decades and in many cases quite a few decades before the pilgrims came. But it's all part of one great story, which is the coming of the good news of Jesus Christ to the people of the Americas. That story has unbelievable tragedy, often unspeakable violence and abuse involved in it over the centuries. But it is one that does transform a place that is violent and in many, many cases unlettered and without the benefit of understanding that God loves each and every soul to a place where the gospel thrives, where you can find people living peaceful and joyful uh, and,
and saved Christian lives by the millions and the hundreds of millions all across the Americas.
So, though, Cy, it's threatened again. Our dear friend Archbishop Alexander Sample, I think of him especially in the news lately with Oregon tightening restrictions on worship, limiting it to 10 or fewer people or something like this.
Yeah. Well, and it's threatened also just by the conditions of the
modern world.
Modern world,
unbelief.
Yeah, and sometimes quite satisfied and saleable unbelief. I mean, there's a lot of people making money off destroying our culture.
Yes.
Okay. So, but one of the things we talked about at the break is that in this great story, that the pilgrims do play their part in. The Catholic priest often figures as the defender of the people of the Americas.
Yes.
Like often, again and again and again, the story is of soldiers who are abusive or merchants who are exploitative. But the priest, whether it's Father Serra here or Bishop de las Casas in southern Mexico or Father de Smet in the Midwest and in the Jesuits of Canada, the priest stands out as the person who defends the native people.
You know, when Cortez arrives in Tenochtitlan and then eventually conquers it, one of the first things that he tells the Aztecs is that our sovereign across the sea is going to send better men than we are.
Yeah.
That's what Cortez
says.
Isn't
that a great line?
He's saying, better men than we are, who are going to share with you, you know, the fullness of real truth. And this, in fact, is what happens. And it is Franciscans and Dominicans in Mexico who are the ones who report back to the emperor, to Charles V, of the abuse that natives are enduring at the hands of Spanish soldiers or political officials, and in fact concealing the report thereof, hidden in a barrel with bacon, or I think the story goes.
Oh, right, yeah. But that's exactly what he did. Yeah.
You know, in our own country, you mentioned Father de Smet, the Jesuit hero who was up in the Dakotas and into Idaho, or what is now Idaho, and he was a defender of the Lakota, probably against the predations of the American government. But a little one who is less known, but his cause is underway and of great interest to me, is Father Samuel Mazzucchelli, who was a Dominican, an Italian, and he evangelized good portions of southern Wisconsin into Iowa, a real polymath, built churches, designed cities, was an astronomer. But he also found himself constantly defending the rights of the natives, Potawatomi, I guess, in Wisconsin against the government of the United States. So you're right. And then Sarah also.
Can I add one more?
Yeah.
You remember Helen Hunt Jackson wrote the book Ramona? And it's about...
Right. Just up the street from us, or just over the mountain. Yeah.
Well, there is in the late 1800s this growing sense that we have mistreated the Native Americans, the Indians is what they were, of the time. And it comes as a consequence in large part because of this book Ramona that Helen Hunt Jackson wrote about a white woman who married an Indian man here in San Diego. And it comes from a true story. And there's a wonderful priest in the book who protects them and marries them and protects them from the white people who want to kill this Indian man. That actually happened.
Yes.
And it's a Father Ubach who was a priest here in San Diego. So this is just another example of over and over and over again, the priest as protector of the native people.
You know, Cy, these things are often difficult to talk about in our time where so much conversation gets reduced to what you can tweet in 130 characters or less or whatever the limit is. I don't even know. I don't tweet. And so there will be inevitably someone listening and saying, "Oh, well, why aren't they mentioning, you know, all scalping or the way the Cherokee behaved or the Iroquois behaved or whatever?" And all of these things are so. There is horrible brutality. The Aztecs themselves, of course, probably practiced human sacrifice on a scale that no people in history ever did.
No, it really does almost seem like a satanic outpouring before the coming of Christianity.
Yeah.
It does. It's just maniacal what the Aztecs did.
My only point here is that it's a complex tale, as all tales in human history are, and there's heroic and villainous on both sides of it. I would recommend, I think I gave it to you, Cy, because I saw it sitting in your office and you probably haven't read it yet, Paul Horgan's book, A Distant Trumpet. Which Paul Horgan was a Catholic novelist from upstate New York, and then found or resettled when he was a boy. His parents moved out to the High Southwest, and he has a biography of LeMay, Archbishop LeMay, LeMay of Santa Fe. But also, he wrote this book, A Distant Trumpet, which talks about the Indian wars in the New Mexico and Arizona territories. And I think he really handles it beautifully. Horrible things were done on both sides, and it's. It's a complex tale, but there are truly magnificent and saintly priests whose chief interest, and of course it goes back to these Jesuits or back to Franciscans and Dominicans in Mexico, whose chief interest is bringing souls to salvation. And this is part of the limit of when you have the conversation with somebody. If you're not prepared to say that when Columbus came here, he was funded by a crown whose motive was the salvation of people, right? They had other motives, for sure. One of them was get enough gold to go recover the Holy Land, right? But if then there's just kind of a limit to the conversation that we can have. So we started the hour by saying, I like to think about history in terms of the incarnation at work in human history. Once you've accepted that's the fullness of the understanding of history, I find it hard to talk about it any other way.
Because that is the true way to talk about history. And this drives modern people insane that some things are true and some things are false. But Christ is the center point. I mean, when God comes into history, that's the center point of history. And so everything that follows upon that is either the story of humans who haven't yet met that God, humans who are resisting the march of that God through history, or humans who are assisting in it. There's nothing else. There's no other.
And then occasionally in the story, God will do something like a massive lightning flash in case you're not getting it. And the apparition at Tepeyac Hill is the example par excellence of that in this hemisphere, and of course we have the Tilma still revealing secrets to remind us of that.
Well, I want to ask you about that, but I better take a break before I do that because we do want to move in then because there is this there are the halting efforts of human beings, and then there are the efforts of heaven and the consequences of what happened with the apparition of Our Lady of Guadalupe are. Mind-boggling.
They are.
They're mind-boggling. They're beyond. You could have sent a million priests, and every single one of them a saint, and it wouldn't have had the effect that Our Lady of Guadalupe had.
Yes.
In the world. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're continuing our conversation with our president, Chris Cech, about the coming of the good news of Jesus Christ into the new world. And we do that in part, of course, because it's Thanksgiving. And on Thanksgiving, we think about the pilgrims. And the pilgrims are just part of a much, much larger story. And they play, just like all of us, a much smaller part in that whole story than Our Lady does. So we'll talk about Our Lady when we come back.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at magnificat.com.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His Church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
Called you guys a couple of years ago and telling you that I had an answer for your question. There's nothing going to stop me from becoming a Catholic. I'm about to start my third year. It's been a beautiful journey. And some advice for people who are thinking about becoming Catholic. Oh my goodness, listen to EWTN day and night. It's just beautiful. Forget the mainstream media. Just stick to EWTN. You'll learn so much and you'll want to become a Catholic like now.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live.
On this, our sponsor, San Pellegrino. Wouldn't that be something?
A little bit of San Pellegrino water while you're talking about on Thanksgiving.
I'm sorry, I go through them like crazy. They're just so there's not a calorie in them. And
what I mean, I don't know.
We're completely
off topic. But what is it about San Pellegrino water that is so good? It's so much better than everything else that you could drink.
It's made by Catholics.
Oh, is that it?
I don't know. They're Italians.
That's it. It's good Catholic water. It's good Catholic water. Yeah.
St. Peregrine, if you're suffering from cancer, right?
Is St. Peregrine related to St. Pellegrino?
Is Pellegrino pilgrims? Holy pilgrims is pilgrims.
Yeah. Oh, so it's pilgrim water. Perfect for today's show, which was on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
There is nobody who we have on this show who I am more easily distracted with than you.
It's a special skill of mine. Can I share with you, Jackie hates it when I start telling a story because it will inevitably take a few turns down some corridors. And she is, could you just get to the end.
Well, the
please.
Thing she has the virtue of being witty.
Of like, impatience?
No, that's not a virtue. Impatience is not a virtue. But she says a quick line and it very, very funny.
Right.
She
gets all her material from me.
Yeah. But she tightens it up. That's the important thing. She gets it from you, but she tightens it up.
No,
so,
but this is for 30 years. This has been an idée fixe of
cut to the chase?
Yeah, this doesn't have to take an
hour. But it's not just that. It's something about you distracts me. I don't know what it is, but like, why am I talking about the Pellegrino water that you're drinking? I have no idea. Yeah. Catholic Answers, sponsored by.
I have ADD. I have a hard time staying.
I do. Okay. Well, we're not well matched for radio then. But let's go back to let's talk about Our Lady of Guadalupe a little bit.
Yes.
Because we could talk about the pilgrims all day long, and the story's not going to get any better. But that's Our Lady of Guadalupe. That story, I can never get enough of it. So give us the setting.
As with each passing year, as I dig deeper and deeper into the story, I fall more in love with it, and my devotion to her.
This is how I always start the story. Can I just tell you how I always start the story?
Yes.
First of all, Joan of Arc saved Catholic Europe. Then that's how I always like. I don't know. I always have to connect it to Joan of Arc.
Well, you know, they are singular. I think
you and I share this view.
God intervenes so directly in the affairs of men.
The whole history of the world would be different without Joan of Arc and Our Lady of Guadalupe.
When I talk about Our Lady of Guadalupe, I say it's hard to think of a story where God has so intervened in the life of a nation outside of Joan of Arc. And by the way, in the collect or the communion antiphon, in both the old rite and the new rite, I forget which psalm it comes from, mea culpa, but God has not acted thus for any other nation, words to that effect, yeah.
For the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe?
Yes. Yeah.
And it really is true. Mexico is a blessed nation because of this. Mexico is the heart of the Americas now because she is the patroness of all of the Americas.
Yeah.
She's our patroness.
So give us something. Could you start with the historical context of Our Lady of Guadalupe? What's the history that she steps into and interrupts?
Cortez comes in the early part of the 16th century. When does he come onto the Americas? 1524 or something like that. Anyway, makes his way to Tenochtitlan, conquers the Aztecs with an amphibious assault. All Marines listening will be interested to know. And then shortly thereafter, Spain begins to colonize the region and sends priests. And one of them baptizes a peasant whose name in the Nahuatl language is Talking Eagle, but takes the name Juan Diego. He and his wife are baptized, and you'll remember his wife's name. I won't. I'm sorry. She dies. He's a widower. He's in his early 50s, and he's on his way to Sicilia, maybe. I can't recall. Anyway, he's on his way to catechism class, catechism instruction. And
Maria Lucia?
Very good. I knew it was Italian. and I knew it ended in an A. And in a vowel, yeah. So he's on his way to catechism class, and he hears beautiful music up on the top of the Tepeyac Hill, and he walks up there, and Our Lady explains to him what she wants from him. Go tell the bishop, I want a beautiful church here. And Juan Diego says, really, you've got the wrong man for the job. I'm a simple fellow, and I have no business going and talking to the bishop, who is... yeah, that's not that you want someone else. He says, no, I know what I'm doing, and go and tell him. His first attempt with the bishop is unsuccessful. She tells him to go back. The bishop asks questions. He's interested. He asks for a sign, and she gives him one.
And I love the part about how she comes down the hill, though.
Oh, that is true. Well, his uncle is not well. Yeah. Right, I left that out at Miacuapo. So his uncle's not well, and his uncle says, can you get me a priest because I'm going to die? So he goes in search of a priest to give his uncle last rites, and so he avoids Tepeyac Hill because he hasn't done what Our Lady has asked him to do, and he doesn't want to see her. So she comes down the hill and finds him. Come on, Juan Diego.
I am the queen of heaven. Don't make me come down the hill, yeah, Juan Diego.
What are we doing? But her words to him are they're the most consoling words. Anyone who's not feeling consoled or anxious about anything just needs to read this exchange between Our Lady and Juan Diego, because all throughout she says, I don't understand why. What are you concerned for? I've looked after everything. I'm seeing to everything. Are you not in the fold of my arms? Mm. And I can tell you this, Cy, because you know my brother now, Father Paul Cech, is the director of the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in La Crosse, Wisconsin, which if you're a listener to this program and you've not been, you need to make a pilgrimage to La Crosse and see this beautiful shrine built by the masterful architect Duncan Stroik, under the care of Bishop Burke, now Cardinal Burke, but Bishop Burke when he was Bishop of La Crosse. And in Spanish, in the narthex of the church up, where the wall meets the ceiling, I'm sure architects have a word for that space, there are those words, are you not in the fold of my arms? Are you not in the fold of my arms? It's so consoling. So he gathers the flowers. He thinks the flowers are the sign because they're not native and it's December. He brings the flowers, but then there's the real miracle, the tilma, which continues to be a miracle now almost 500 years later. In 2031, we'll celebrate 500 years of this. My friends, you need to start getting ready now.
For 2031. That's a good point.
For the 500th anniversary.
Well,
I was talking to Cardinal Burke about this. I don't know if I can tell the story in the air, but I'm going to tell it anyway. I was up in La Crosse, and we were with my brother helping with his organization chart and things. And I said, you know, everything you're doing now has to be directed towards 2031 for a huge party, a huge celebration. Cardinal Burke, great Midwestern boy, farmer, he says, I think we should have fireworks. I'm like, of course, you should have fireworks.
Well, do you realize that that will be 1 year after the 2000th anniversary of the death and resurrection of the Lord? So those are going to be a couple of big years. We've got to get working on here at Catholic Answers. We've got to get ready.
Yeah.
We've only got 10 years.
Yeah.
But then one of the reasons I like the story of Our Lady of Guadalupe is that it is it is also evidence for the basic justice of the Catholic Church, in that the Catholic Church did not come to Mexico and force people to become Catholic. As a matter of fact, it would have been a crime. It's an ecclesiastical crime to force someone to be baptized.
Yes.
And so they actually were kind of failing at baptizing people in Mexico.
Yes.
Even though they controlled the whole place and there was social advantage to becoming baptized, people were not getting baptized.
Yeah. 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 And so Our Lady comes, and then within a few years, 9 million are baptized.
9 million baptized people. Yeah. And then the faith spreads all over the Americas, coming out from there. But not only that, this is the one that always gets me. You know, people think that the Philippines was evangelized by Spain, but it was not. It was evangelized by Mexico. Mm-hmm. I mean, indirectly by Spain, but the priests who went came from Mexico. The priests who came to the Southwest here, to where we are right now, they came from Mexico.
Yeah, and as far as baptisms are concerned, they make much slower progress in the Philippines. They don't have the benefit of an apparition.
Yeah.
And of course the image in the tilma speaks to the indigenous people with the various glyphs. You know, the glyph is the word, pictograph doesn't really describe it exactly, but these unusual patterns in the tilma represent things that were known to the native people, including the one right over Our Lady's womb. It's the only apparition in which she appears pregnant. I feel very confident saying that, because I've been saying that for several years and no one's corrected me.
Yeah.
So the only apparition in which she appears pregnant, but that glyph right over her stomach, you know, indicates a deity.
I see. Yeah.
And then scientists keep discovering things in, you know, the reflections in the eyes and the musical score and the
position of the stars as far as the date.
The constellation.
Yeah.
It's so funny. So, you know, people always talk about science. We're going to follow the science. Well, if you follow the science, what scientific observation says about the tilma?
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Lady of Guadalupe, then, is sometimes people will say, well, there was already this Aztec goddess that people were familiar with, and people just kind of replaced one for the other. There was just kind of a substitution that went on there. It's kind of a cultural appropriation.
Yeah, there are probably even some Catholic priests who have made that argument. What I would say is, so the site of the apparitions had been the site of some kind of a goddess temple. That's mm-hmm. true, on Tepeyac Hill. I think God writes his revelation to one degree or another. Father Hugh's much better on this than I am, in all of our hearts. And so we see in the pagan world practices of those who have not had the benefit of revelation, and yet in some way or another, they point to the fullness of a revelation. You'd see this in Greeks, and I think you certainly see it in the people of the New World. So yeah, so God says, okay, well, this is what it was.
Yeah, that in a certain sense, that temple to Athena that gets changed into a Church of Our Lady,
right?
That's not. There's nothing wrong with that, in the sense that one does, in fact, prefigure the other in the heart.
Yeah, that one fulfills the other, if you will.
Yeah, right. Like, in a sense, it's the Lord saying, this is what you were looking for when you had that devotion to Athena.
Yes.
Or whoever the Aztec god was.
Yeah, Rome, as you know, Si, when we were there, gosh, almost a year ago.
More than
a year ago, is just really a place where this reality that you and I are discussing right now is driven home, because you see it in the architecture, all of these Christian shrines that stand on the foundations of pagan temples.
Well, thanks for doing an hour with us. I swear it feels like 5 minutes. Jackie's wrong. I'm just going to say that right now. Jackie is wrong.
I'll get her to listen to this episode.
Uh, I'm not going to make the mistake of following you again, giving a talk. But thanks very much.
You did great at that talk in Australia. It was very moving. Yeah. You speak from the heart.
Okay. All right. I'm going to accept that.
It's true.
Someday I would like to speak from knowledge, but what the heck? We're we're where we are. But thanks very much, because it is, we have so much to be thankful for. It's been a very tough year. But the Lord, the story of the incarnation is moving through history, and it's changing everything, and it's going to keep changing everything.
And how great that we're actors in that story.
Yes. And so I'll say this for your development. And so is everyone who donates to Catholic Answers.
Oh, and they are.
See you next time.